My grandma and grandpa lived in a small farmhouse. Lizzie Erwicker lived in the lean-to cottage on the west wall of our house. When she was on her last and crucial bed, she called on the All High to allow her some time to make amends for her life of mischief and wickedness. She did not ask to go on living in herself, but to go into a she-cat for as goodly a time as the All High thought fit. Lizzie Erwicker was a wicked woman, and suspected of being in league with you-know-who with horns. She told fortunes, taking money for it. She made mommets, and if a girl was in a predicament, she had ways of dealing with it, such as daily a cube of laundry blue Reckitts dissolved in gin and water, or a whole nutmeg grated into a mug of Guinness, and other remedies I could not reveal, even if I knew them. Sometimes the predicament was resolved. If it was not, she would say, "Never mind, my handsome. It must be a child of the All High, and joy may surely come of it. Bless you." She could also ill-wish people. She was always coming to Grandma borrowing a cup of sugar, a morsel of butter, or a bit of fat bacon. My grandma was driven to extremes by this borrowing, and one day she said, "Clear off, Lizzie. Attend to your wants yourself." Lizzie Erwicker turned on her and said, "I curse you." "Very soft," Grandma said. She was a frightening woman. First of all, she had a sunken hip and was very lame. She had a wall eye and a short nose like a cat and hair out of an old flock mattress. She wore several long black skirts, all torn and damaged, and she smelt very high when they swayed and swung, like a long-forgotten pheasant. You may wonder how I know all about this. It's because I was reared by my grandma. I was a love child, you see, and my mother walked out a few days after she had me without revealing where she was going or who had ruined her. Grandma never forgave her not telling who and where. And how often. Grandma and I were like a double person. She used to say, "Ellen, you're like me entirely. You're clever." And she was right. Oh, yes. There was no doubt she suffered greatly from Lizzie Erwicker, especially after the cursing. Grandpa lost an in-calf heifer and the calf. Prince, one of the Shire horses, fell and broke his leg. He was finished. Grandma's two favourites, my Uncle Stanley and Tom, went pigeon shooting, got into a quarrel, and Tom shot Stanley. Grandma spent all night taking buckshot out of his back and behind with a needle. Her eldest daughter, Eva, who worked in Chelmsford, was ravished by a commercial traveller, and the young turkeys stood about dying like flies. So, of course, in the end, Grandma had to put things to right with Lizzie Erwicker, which she did with a bag of demerara and a pound of the best butter. So, in due time, there Grandma was, sitting by Lizzie Erwicker's rank-smelling deathbed and fairly retching with the stench. And sitting on her pillow was Erwicker's tomcat, Saul of Tarsus. He was black and white and full of spite. Though he could purr pretty enough when he got a lick of cream or a chicken leg. And suddenly, Liz sat up and invoked the All High with a plea to be transmogrified instead of being blotted right out. Grandma swore a voice answered and said something like, "Sharp as an axe head, wicker in a pike, thrap as boggins." She said the voice was high and like a parrot, and she couldn't understand or catch the drift, for at that moment Lizzie Erwicker choked and rattled into death. Saul of Tarsus squalled and screamed, and into the bedroom walked the prettiest little long-haired grey kitten you ever saw. Of course, Grandma was the only one present at the death, for I never went into that noisome cottage. But next morning, there in our kitchen, was Saul of Tarsus, and between his paws, the grey kitten. She was sweet as a lily flower. Can I have her for my own? I cried. Well, yes, you can. But never forget, she's highly likely to be Lizzie Earwicker in a catskin trying to repent. Grandma said she would do the funeral tea for Lizzie's two sons, Charlie and Robert. Charlie paid. He seemed very well off. He had a lovely gold wristwatch and a ring with a diamond in, and he drove a big red car. Robert came on an old rusty push bike. I'd never seen either of them before. They never visited their mother. Charlie was very handsome, with red cheeks and black curling hair. He asked me whose little girl I was, and when I said, Miriam's, he seized me by the shoulders and I felt myself come out in goose flesh. I could have become addicted to Charlie Earwicker. Robert was nothing, but of course my grandma said he had a different father. And grandma said to keep clear of both of them. Especially Charlie. The kitten was addicted to him too. Followed him about, scrabbling up his trouser leg to his waistcoat. Oh, he was taken with her. But so was Saul of Tarsus. Saul picked her up by the scruff and took her off to his basket and groomed her really prettily. So, there we were on that funeral afternoon, Grandma and me, Saul of Tarsus and Lily Kitten, and Charlie mooning at me from the doorway. He gave my grandma a real handful of money notes, and I heard him whisper, "Tell me true, for God's sake, whose is she?" "She's Miriam's," said Grandma, "and I've seen neither hair nor eye of that young madam for 14 years. She's not for touching, so you sit in your hands, Charlie Earwicker." Then I clearly heard, as you do hear a whisper, "If she's Miriam's, she's mine." Grandma cried out as in great pain, "You? You? All the time it was you. Once. Only once," he cried. But she seized hold of Grandpa's horsewhip in the corner and set about Charlie. My dad. That lovely man, my dad. I believed it. I knew it was true, so I flew at Grandma and tried to protect Charlie. But like Miriam, my mother, he fled away. What could he do against Grandma? Later. "Oh, Grandma, Grandma," I said. I was crying something awful. "What a tangle. I'm your grandchild by Miriam, but I must be Liz Earwicker's grandchild through Charlie. That means Lily Kitten is my granny, so I'm partly cat through the All High." "Who is the All High?" Grandma told me to think no more of it. "You're clever, just like me, Ellen," she said. "You trust in that. No need to dwell on dole and dwine and disdain. Come, my angel, we'll have a little woman's meal away from funeral baked meats and chitterlings." "Oh, yes," I wept. "Bread with butter and brown sugar." "That's right, to keep us strong. Women are best and strongest." "Grandpa and Charlie are lovely," I said. Grandma only said, "Men have their uses." Then began the happy time. There was such harmony now Lizzie Earwicker was no longer next door with her sad girls and her ill-wishing and borrowing. The hens laid well, the calves fetched a good price, and only once was there dole and dwine, and that was when Lily Cat, on the way to her first litter, bit off the heads of some chicks Grandpa'd left drying off in his old bowler hat by the fender. Only once. Grandpa said he'd drown her. But I cried so hard he gave her a second chance. She never did it again. Except for that one time, she was sweet and gentle, and she purred and kissed. Oh, she was so pretty with her fetching wall eye and short nose and ruff like feathers from a pillow. She caught mice and brought them to show. And when she was big enough, she went ratting with Saul. And every now and then, she made a nest in the kitchen cupboard to bring her kittens to. We supplied the whole village and beyond, for Lily's kittens were famous. Only two or three at a time, they were always a surprise. Black and white, tabby, ginger, and once in a while, one in her own image. These we kept. It is a heartening sight to see Lily and her daughters and granddaughters and great-granddaughters as like as peas in a pod gathering round their little saucers. But time, like an ever-rolling stream, bears all its sons away. My grandpa died first. So we got in a mason and a carpenter and did up Liz Earwicker's cottage with nice clean whitewash and damask curtains, and then moved in. I planted roses and honeysuckle and bought a hive of bees. We let the farmhouse to Mr. Brown and his sister, who never bothered us in any way. But Grandma soon failed in strength. One evening, as the sun went down, she came over all weak and took my hand and said, "It's the habit of too many years. I can't go on without Grandpa. You must have a man. Look out for the right one. You're clever enough to know, and very strong. I'll watch over you." And she called out, "Make me into a bird all high." And then she added, pointing at me, "And if you can favour Liz Earwicker with the power, she who was so black, you can favour my child here who is so white." These were her last words. I cried until the sun rose again, and on the windowsill there sat a collared dove softly calling. But, you see, as ever, there was conflict. Lily Cat spat at her and snaked towards her, so I had to catch her and put her in a basket and climb to the roof of the mill to free her. "Grandma Dove," I said, "don't come back. There's danger in our house. Liz Earwicker may overcome us." But the collared dove came back, and I prisoned her safely in a wicker cage. Very gladly, around this time, I buried Saul of Tarsus when he died of a chicken bone. Imagine me now, then, with my dove, my mother cat, and her children's children. Every day, I thank the All-High for these blessings, and for seeing fit to favour me so particular. But there's been no time this many a year for searching for and catching of a man. There's too much to do. So many calling for the tea leaves to be read and the cards to be shuffled. My cottage is fresh with flowers and essences and drying herbs. My clothes are white and bleached with rosemary. I am full of love. Oh, and now, if you'll pardon me, I must go with my cats and kittens to catch the supper mice.